Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today I'm very pleased to introduce our special guest, Dr. Ron Bell. Hello, Ron.
Hello, but little correction there. I'm not a doctor. I'm a master's level counselor.
Well, you should be a doctor, given your...
I should. They should give me an honorary degree somewhere. So if you have any polls, just let me know.
Okay. So let me tell the audience a little bit about you. So you're a tenured professor, we'll call you Professor Bell, of Counseling and Human Development at Southwestern Oregon Community College. Ron earned his Master's in Counseling from Arizona State University 35 years ago, began the study of Ericksonian hypnosis, and has been doing hypnotherapy ever since. Ron is the creator of the Person-Centered Mathematics Program, and he's author of A Hypnotist Teaches Math, and has presented on this topic for the American Psychological Association and the American Counseling Association. Most recently, Ron presented at the annual meeting of the Society for Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis on the topic of conversational hypnosis. And currently, he's writing a book with the tentative title, Nonviolent Conversational Hypnosis. My, I have so many questions for you, Ron. So again, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad I got a few things you can ask me about.
Yeah, so let's start maybe way at the beginning. I have older teenagers and young adults listening to this program from my practice, and they're always trying to figure out what they're going to do with their lives. How did you get involved in psychology and in counseling, human development?
Oh, that's an easy one. I got into theater. I was going to be an actor. So I got 2 degrees in theater. And then I was at UCLA. UCLA has a summer camp for underprivileged kids. And I was a volunteer counselor there every summer for like 5 years. And I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with the kids and realized that, you know, acting was fun, but working with kids and people was just, that was the meaning of life. So I hung out, did a variety of different things, some theaters, some other things for 5-6 years, and finally said, okay, I'm ready to go back to graduate school, got my master's in counseling.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me how many people sort of meander around in the young adult years until they settle on something. It's not, most of the people I interview don't go on a straight line.
Yeah, and I think having that background in theater just makes me more comfortable with myself and able to find humor in things and perform a little bit, which in therapy can all work out really well often enough with clients.
That is true. I had the pleasure of attending your workshop at the recent Society of Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis meeting. That's where we met, and we did kind of theater there. I wonder, before we leave the subject of theater, tell me about the psychology of acting, and I'm particularly interested in method acting, because I've seen patients who've been stuck in a bad place because of method acting.
Been stuck in a bad place because of
I had one patient who took on the role of King Lear and became King Lear, and then after the show, he still felt despondent.
Well, I guess, the easy thing to say there would be that something in playing that role, connected with something in his his past, his relationships with people, and just got him aware of something that depressed him. So I don't know that the acting part of it. See, I was never a method actor myself. I'm always impressed with actors who can just start crying, you know, on cue. I'm really good at getting my clients to cry on cue. That's something I've always been amazed at, that, you know, I just know that they're going to cry, and it's always a great thing when they do. It's a very healing thing. So I can get them to do it. Never really was able to do it myself. So method acting, I've heard about it. We played with it in college, but that's one thing I'm definitely not an expert at.
And what about hypnosis and acting? Do you think great actors do hypnosis, whether they're called or not, as they act?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say that if we look at, you know, what hypnosis is, what is a trance state, and what I presented on with the conversational hypnosis, my research into that kind of suggested to me that traditional hypnosis and conversational is different, but it's all trance. But people go in and out of trance, you know, during a conversation, and they're these little mini trances. So, to the idea that when you are playing a part, when you are acting, and you're really getting into that, and you're tapping into your own experience, that you're putting yourself into a trance state, that makes total sense to me.
I think there's a lot of overlap, at least with the actors I've been fortunate to work with. Mm. And I've even had the subconscious demonstrate a play to the conscious self, which is quite interesting. So a different state of mind showing the conscious state of mind how to act.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So you studied first Ericksonian hypnosis. Can you explain what that means? What is Ericksonian hypnosis? We've never talked really about it on this show.
Okay, well, Milton Erickson, who I guess he founded the Society for Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis and the American Society of Hypnosis, his way of doing hypnosis as it evolved, he did it for his entire life, really, since he was 5 years old. And it was based mostly, I would say, on utilization. Whatever you utilize, whatever the client gives you. The client talks about a certain thing, and with a lot of enthusiasm, you know that's something important to them, and there may be a resource that you can utilize there and present to them later on as a solution to their problem or a resource that they can use in troubling situations. So it's very involved stuff, and it's fascinating for me in that it's not, my understanding, and you correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding of traditional hypnosis is you diagnose what the problem is, you have a conversation with the client to really narrow down exactly what the problem is, then you put them in trance, and then you do some work, you give them some suggestions, things to solve that problem. In Ericksonian, that interview of the client before the hypnosis is the critical thing, and to really find out what's important to that client, how they do things uniquely and individually, and recognize that the trance they're going to go into is unique and individual based upon their stuff. So it takes out all the assumptions, which is a real hard thing for a therapist and for me also to say, because I'm sitting there going, I know exactly what the problem is. I know exactly what they need. But they're not in a position to hear that. I have to go to where they're at, basically speak their language. And so utilization is the main principle for me of what Ericksonian hypnosis is about.
I think the descriptions you gave of traditional and Ericksonian hypnosis fit what I understand. But as you're describing Ericksonian hypnosis, I'm thinking, gosh, your conversational hypnosis is Ericksonian as its course. So maybe you can introduce us what does conversational hypnosis mean, and do you agree with me that it's Ericksonian in its approach?
Oh yeah, I think definitely it's on that limb of the tree, the hypnosis tree, that the major branch is Ericksonian. And so if you look at what we do in conversational, it all fits within the Ericksonian model. And I guess a conversational hypnotherapist would say, when we look at what Erickson did, we would say that he was doing conversational hypnosis when he wasn't doing trance work. He did a lot of therapy that wasn't hypnosis. He would, you know, he'd do family therapy, he'd do individual therapy, and he wouldn't always put them into trance. But in our understanding, he was watching the client exhibit trance and then utilizing that. And so that's really what conversational hypnosis does. In a nutshell, we talk to the client, we listen to the client, and when we see something that is unconscious, and that might be a facial expression that they make, it might be that they would cough, they might laugh, they might stutter, they might say something and then reverse themselves. They might say, I want to go up. Well, actually, I want to go down. And then they'll talk on, and they won't even recognize that they said both things. So whenever something happens that we identify as unconscious, we become curious about that. We try to keep the client there. You said you want to go up, and you also said you want to go down. How does that work? How can you be up and down at the same time? And the conscious mind will attempt to answer the question. And we kind of politely say, thank you, conscious mind, but we're really not interested in your answer. We want the unconscious answer. So, and really, we don't even want the answer. That's the interesting part of it. It really doesn't matter how they answer. The idea is we're keeping them in whatever brought them to say, I want to be up and I want to be down. There's something going on there. And if we just keep them in focused on that, they're going into this little hypnotic trance. And they're trying to figure, yeah, what does that mean? I want to be up and I want to be down. I never thought about that at the same time. And their conscious mind is coming up with lots of assumptions about that, conclusions about why that would be. And that's just the conscious mind, you know, blathering on. It's really not going to get them anywhere. But their unconscious mind, when it's considering that, and I keep it there, and I keep the conscious mind occupied so the unconscious mind doesn't start rattling on about some other story, that just keep them in up and down, like a yo-yo, up and down. You want to be up, you want to be down. Anything that I might say to just keep them on that idea, that premise, gives their unconscious mind an opportunity to see how does that all work, and that will take them to somewhere interesting. It might resolve the problem. It might take them to another level of the problem, and then we'll look for another unconscious moment. And it's an interesting process of just trusting that their unconscious knows exactly what to do if we quiet the conscious mind and give it space to just look at things. And one way I like to think about it is that, like, imagine you have a big house with lots of rooms, and all the information that you need is in different rooms within that house. When I ask the right questions, then those parts come from the different rooms. They all come down to the living room. They sit down together and go, oh, hi. We haven't seen each other in a long time. Let's talk about this. And I give them the chance to have that conversation, and they know what to do, and they figure out the solution to the problem. So is that enough to give you a sense of this weird conversational hypnosis thing?
Yeah, it's a great description. I'm wondering, so when you have an intuition of what the problem is, how often are you right?
100% of the time on the surface problem. But the real problem is somewhere underneath. And a lot of times, it's like, if I know what the problem is, if I can see the parts of it, then I have a great intuition. But most of the time, it's hidden. And so I will never, if I can, I, a lot of times, I will see, okay, it's obvious, here's the solution. But I know if I tell them the solution, they won't hear it. I've got to allow them to bring that out. So, I try not to steer them toward what I believe is the solution. But if I continue to ask the right questions, and really everything comes from what they say. So if they, again, they say they want to be up and down, and I just repeat their exact words, up and down, up where, up how, you know, how is it to be up, where is it to be down. You know, I'm not introducing any new ideas, and then they get to where they want to go. And I probably haven't answered your question there because I think I lost it. I probably went into trance.
Well, my thought is that I don't even, sometimes I have an idea, but I don't really spend a lot of time thinking about what I think. My job, like yours, is to let the patient tell their story, although the conversational hypnosis is a pretty unique way, in my experience, that people get out stories. At least maybe we get out stories like that all the time, but we don't utilize the subconscious cues as much as well as you do. And I can tell you, this is not for me it's not obvious. I understand you do it, but when I tried to apply it myself, it wasn't that simple to think in that fashion.
So the conscious mind has its own stories, and I try very hard not to listen to any of it. The unconscious stories, when the unconscious is speaking, it's telling us the relevant information. The conscious mind is often just trying to distract us. And that's a really interesting thing, because the conscious mind of the client is representing all the things that scare them or make them feel embarrassed. Or for whatever reason, there are certain things they don't want to say, so they're going to go in some other direction. So when I keep them with that unconscious moment, which is what they don't want to pay attention to, but I keep them there, then good things happen. And it may be that then they express some emotion, but that's the emotion that needed to come out. That's the emotion that they were trying to avoid. So the conscious mind, I don't think, is thinking. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's thinking, I really don't want to talk about this. And other times, it's just finding a way to, something else feels better to talk about. And so it'll go in that direction and tell that story. So my job, again, is to not listen to the conscious stories, recognize them as conscious. And that's the art, I guess, is to know what, be able to identify as quickly as you can what is conscious, what is unconscious.
It's fascinating stuff. Now, I'm also fascinated by the tentative title of your new book, The Nonviolent Conversational Hypnosis. What is violent conversational hypnosis?
Yeah, I probably have to work on a new title. But I'm trying to put two concepts together. I don't know if you're familiar with Marshall Rosenberg and nonviolent communication.
No, please educate us.
Okay, so Marshall Rosenberg was back in the 70s and 80s, and he's just brilliant, brilliant stuff that I think just kind of got lost, because in basic communication, right, we know that in communication there are things that we observe, and then we have feelings about them, and we have wants, and we strive to get what we want. So if you read Marshall's work, it almost sounds like that. You think, okay, this is just basic communications. If you look at it more deeply, you see that the key for him is wants and needs. So we all have needs, and they're human needs that every single human being on the planet ever, we have the same want. We have the same needs. We go about trying to satisfy those needs in different ways, and we call those wants. Right. I want this woman to love me forever. Right. What I need is love, but I want this particular woman. And so I will strive to get her love, and if I don't get it, then I'm miserable, and I might do antisocial kinds of things. When I get down to the real need that I have to be loved, to have belonging, you know, all the things that love gives me, then I can see I have choice. There are different ways I can go, which is the same thing with conversational hypnosis, which is to say clients will decide there's only one way to get what I need, what I want. And when they see there's only one way and there's a problem with utilizing that way, they can never get what they want or need. So the whole process of conversational hypnosis, when it is successful, it has opened up the client to go, oh, wow, there's a bunch of different ways I could get what I want. I thought there was only one. But if there's a whole bunch of them, I get to choose. So Ron doesn't choose for them. Ron doesn't say, hey, here's a list of choices. Right? The process gets the client to the point where they go, it was pretty silly for me to think there's only one woman in the world. There's like 4 billion of them. Look at all these choices I have, and I can go out and seek love from any one of them. I can seek love from myself. I can seek all kinds of different kinds of love. There's all kinds of choices. So I don't have to tell them about any of those choices. They will uncover them all for themselves.
I like how you help clients figure that out. I will tell my patients there are many choices. I will just tell them, it doesn't matter what you choose. You'll make best of it, and it'll all work out. But your clients figure it out for themselves, which makes it even a more powerful lesson. So that's really impressive. I've got lots more questions for you. We'll be right back after these messages. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, CenterPoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterPointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. Our special guest, Professor Ron Bell, who should be doctor, is teaching us about conversational hypnosis, but he has had many interesting things in his career. I'm wondering if you could please tell me, what is person-centered mathematics?
Okay, well, if you've got an hour and a half, I probably could, but I'll do my best. So
okay.
I've worked for years with students, being a college professor in the counseling department. I work with a lot of students who have math anxiety, and I love mathematics. I can't get enough of math. And so it's always been a puzzle to me that how anyone could not love math like I do. But students have anxiety. So I did a lot of individual work with students, but it's pretty much an epidemic. There's so many students, and especially maybe at a community college level, though I think it's everywhere, but at a community college level you have tons of students who when they're coming, deciding what they want to do as a career, they'll say, I really want to be an architect. I'd love to be an architect. And then we say, great, here's the math requirement. They go, okay, maybe I could be a graphic designer instead. Okay, whatever's going to have less math. And for me, that was just the most painful thing. It just tore my heart out to have all these people changing their major so they could avoid math. Avoiding, you know, not doing what their heart told them is who they are, right? That need for autonomy. Instead of doing that, letting this anxiety about math get in their way. So in order to serve as many students as I could, as efficiently as I could, I created a class where I could have 25 students. We're all working together. Now there's plenty of classes on math anxiety, but we should try to deal with it directly. But working with a big group, you're not really going to get very far, at least in my experience. So with my big group, I would put them all at the chalkboards. The first day when I did this class, I didn't know what I was doing, so I just had them in their desks, and I wanted a volunteer from the group to show this one student. He knew what he was talking about with the problem that we were working on. He said, hey, go to the board and show us how you did it. And he hesitated, and you could see this anxiety building up in him. So I said, okay, never mind. And then I had the best, greatest epiphany of my life. I said, everybody go to the chalkboard. Everybody. So 24 out of 25 went to the chalkboard. The 25th sat there all by herself in the middle of the room. And when she realized she was all by herself, she ran up to the chalkboard with everybody else. There's where the safety was. So students typically, right, you're hiding in the class full of 25 people. You know, you're just one of the many in there, and no one's going to call on you. No one's going to recognize you there. You have some safety. I switched that around, so the only way to be safe was to be out at the chalkboard where you're going to be actively doing mathematics. And everybody gets to see what you do. They get to help you. You get to help them. Nobody knows who's helping who. And you're actually working with people, so half the time you're laughing. And I would tell, that's where my theater background came in. I would tell lots of corny jokes and come up with weird math problems just to get them to have an experience of doing math, and laughing at the same time. Something they'd never experienced before. And that breaks through all that anxiety. And they emerge after 10 weeks of this, going, I feel different when I do math. And then they'd be able to go on and take regular math classes and be successful and get into the careers that they love.
How many times did they meet in a week for those 10 weeks?
We do 3 times a week. So I know now there's a trend to doing 3-hour classes once a week. They're trying to be efficient and ignoring the fact that human beings just don't work that way. We don't have the attention span for that. And it's much better to have this constant experience where several times a week. If I could do it 5 times a week, I would do it 5 times a week. In grade school, you do it 5 times a week, but there, it's more of a punishment. The students feel like they're being punished and forced to go there. With my class, they would, by the second week, they would be looking forward to coming in for a few laughs and to be doing some interesting stuff.
Huh.
The more often, the better.
Did you apply that to other subject matters, just math?
No, just with math. I'd considered something with, like, writer's block and writing anxiety, but math anxiety is such a huge thing. I know that speech and public speaking is rated as the top fear of all. And so maybe I'll start that someday.
The public speaking is more fearful than people afraid of dying, I'm told.
That's what I've heard, yes. But I guess the problem there is to have a room of 25 people all giving speeches at the same time might get a little confusing. So 45 people at the chalkboard is fine.
What hypnotic method are you demonstrating in that teaching method?
I guess when I created that program, I wasn't thinking in terms of hypnosis. I think looking at it now, I would say that when they're at that whiteboard, and what I would do, I'm standing in the middle of the room. They are all at the chalkboards, and I had special extra chalkboards installed in the room to make sure that you could put as many people as you wanted. They'd all have some space, not too much space, because you want them kind of, you know, close enough to other people where they get to chat. And what I would do is I'd give a silly problem, I'd look at the answers, I'd find one that was the right answer, and so basically whenever anybody had a right answer, that gave me an opportunity to give them a stroke, to just acknowledge, not an empty stroke, that, oh, you're doing great, that you have the right answer. But I would typically say is, that's a really interesting answer. And over here on the other side of the room, there's a different answer. That's really interesting. Why don't you guys, go over to that other student and chat about your answers. And I wouldn't say figure out which one's right. I just say go have a chat about the answers and see what happens. And of course, what else are they going to do but figure out, you know, which one of us is right, which one of us is wrong. And because it's not a teacher's intervening, it's just the students. They're equals. So they'll just have that conversation, and they will discover what the right answer was, and the whole class doesn't know. So the rest of the class is working with me on other stuff, and those two people. So nobody ever has an idea. No one ever knows and which of them was wrong.
So similar to conversational hypnosis, this is between people. You let them figure out for themselves where they need to go.
I guess, the more you take that, because I guess in math there's a lot of power dynamics, and I've read and heard before, this is a long time ago, but I remember hearing some very convincing arguments that people who have math anxiety, or people who have been, not people with math anxiety have been sexually abused, but people who have been sexually abused are more likely to exhibit math anxiety. So when you've had a lot of childhood abuse and it comes out, one of the ways that it manifests itself is this anxiety about math. And I'm not sure how the two connect to each other, but when I look at students with math anxiety, and in the back of my mind I'm thinking, you know, what kind of ACEs, if you're familiar with the ACEs concept, what's that stand for? Adult Children of...
Let's pick that up right after the break. We're coming up to hard break. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar, special guest, Professor Ron Bell. We're talking about math anxiety, and you made the comment that people who've been abused, sexually abused, tend to have math anxiety, and you started telling us about ACEs. Explain what you mean by that.
Sure. Now, and I have to apologize. I'm getting old, and sometimes my acronyms escape me. But adults who, as children, experience trauma are a special, unique group, although a huge group, and because trauma doesn't have to be just sexual. It can be physical, emotional, psychological. And people who've had these experiences, they will exhibit a lot of behaviors that the rest of us go, that's weird, that I don't do that, well, I wonder why they do that. And so in the math classroom, and again, this is just my observation, so I can't point to any research for this, but students that exhibit a lot of math anxiety are, you know, the correlation at least is that they have had some kind of abuse, some kind of trauma in their lives. And so the whole ACEs concept is when you recognize that, you can give people the benefit of the doubt. You know, if someone's expressing a lot of anger, if you can look and say that anger is coming from some kind of fear. There's fear underneath there, or there's shame underneath there. And so if you're responding to someone who is exhibiting shame, you're probably going to deal with them differently than someone that's only showing you anger. And so with the ACEs, it's like the student is experiencing some emotion. I know it's coming from some kind of trauma. I know it's coming from some unexpressed need. And so that's what I'm looking at. I'm not focused on their inappropriate behavior. I'm focused on what is their need. And then I can relax and be more empathetic and be a better resource to the student. So
I wonder if the reason. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So just real briefly, in the classroom, I would set everything up to recognize that these students are they're reacting to a bunch of stuff. So I'm not going to introduce a lot of things that are going to trigger them to get anxious. I'm going to have an atmosphere that is extremely supportive.
So I wonder if the people who have been traumatized in earlier in life, if the reason they develop math anxiety because they feel trapped. So math can trap you because there's only one way out, and if you don't know it, you're trapped. And I'm wondering if that's what gets activated.
That's a great way of expressing it. Yeah, it's a great metaphor. I think, you know, in math, there's only one right answer. And you can look at it that way. If you believe there's only one right answer and we have to find it and I can't find it, and then bad things are going to happen if I can't find my way out. Right? So the healthy way to look at it is to say math represents all kinds of interesting ways to solve problems. Who cares if we don't get the right answer to this one? Right? If we make a mistake, and that's one of the things I would do in that class, we would celebrate our mistakes. And I would always make sure, and I didn't even really have to try hard, but I would make mistakes. I love math. I'm really good at math. And I would make mistakes, and they would just see me making a mistake, not caring about it, just moving on, having fun with it, and that modeled for them the idea that they also could enjoy their mistakes. That was a real huge thing in my experience.
So you wrote a book called A Hypnotist Teaches Math. What hypnotic part did you talk about in that book?
Well, that was, and again, it wasn't a book. It was an article that got published in it was a math journal that I got it published in, and it was basically about the person-centered math course, and so we basically talked about a lot of the stuff that I've just been sharing with you. And
got it.
Yeah. So I don't know that
a humanist teaches math. I think you sold yourself short. It wasn't just hypnosis. You were really taking care of the people. And
yeah, I think that a lot of the success of hypnosis, Erickson used to talk about it as it's an I-thou relationship, and it takes two people. People talk about, self-hypnosis, sure, but hypnosis is it's a conversation, it's a communication between two people. And so there's going to be good communication. And I guess the better the relationship is, the more rapport there is, the more trust there is, the more good things can happen. And so my thought in my classroom, that math classroom, is if I'm establishing that I-thou relationship with the student, and I'm promoting that between the students, then authentic things are happening, and the more authentic things are, the less anxiety, the more students can trust that. And at the end of the day, students would tell me, Ron, actually, I really enjoy math. My favorite story is the student I had when one of the first classes I taught. She was in the class, and she hated math, and half the time she wouldn't come to class. When she was there, she enjoyed it, but she would resist it. She got there about half the time, and then she disappeared. And about 2 years later, maybe 5 years later, I ran into her at a supermarket. And she was all excited to see me, and she had her little daughter with her. And her daughter had heard my name and was fascinated and came up and said hi. And so we had this wonderful conversation, and then I said, "So what are you doing with yourself?" And she said, "Well, I'm working. I'm teaching." I said, "You're a teacher? That's awesome. What do you teach?" And she got quiet, and her daughter had to step in and say, "My mommy teaches math." So this woman who hated math, was terrified of math, avoided it at all ends, had become a math teacher, because underneath all that math anxiety was the natural human enjoyment of math, of problem solving. So, for me, that's that moment that says what I believe, what I've done, what I espouse in my classroom, it actually works.
What you're teaching me today is that math anxiety overlaps, I guess it's kind of obvious as I'm saying it, with other kinds of anxiety, and likely responds to therapies I'm used to suggest, including exposure and including pairing it with something fun and learning to think about it differently. And it's wonderful. It's what you've done through your person-centered mathematics program. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I did that all before I even learned the conversational hypnosis part of it. So
there you go. It was part of your training, I think, to prepare for that. Well, we'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. Or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our special guest, Professor Ron Bell, who has a nearly four-decade career involving Ericksonian hypnosis, working in community college and conversational hypnosis. And this segment of the show, I often like to ask our guests if they can give us three tips based on their life experiences that the audience of this show can incorporate into their own lives. What three tips would you give to help improve ourselves?
Three tips on how to improve ourselves?
Yeah, or anything that will improve the world for that matter. What should we do in our lives to help ourselves or help others?
Well, I'll give you one, and then you remind me that I need two more.
Gotcha.
The first one comes straight out of conversational hypnosis, which is be curious. Einstein, that was a big quote from Einstein. He said, I'm nothing special, I'm just curious. And I've seen all kinds of quotes of famous people who just, you know, resonate with that idea. If you're curious, good things will happen. And I guess for me that is, if I know what I'm about, if I know what's right, what's wrong, I know the right path, then I'm going to stay on that one path and I'm going to miss everything else. So if I'm curious, I'm just saying, there's a bunch of paths here. I know the one I like, but I wonder what that path's like over there. I wonder how that other person, their experience, they don't do things the way I do. I wonder why that is. Instead of going, my way is the right way, hey, you guys, do it my way. Right? Instead, to be curious and go, I wonder how that works for them. I wonder, why would they make a choice so different from my choice? How does that, in some way, it has to be, there has to be something useful in that. So be curious. That's tip number one.
I think that's a great tip, and I think it really fits the time and age we're in where people aren't curious about how other people arrive at different choices.
I'm thinking about the politics these days, and wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody was more curious?
Right. Yeah, I could go on about the politics stuff forever. I guess the, let's see, as you were saying that, I was thinking of another one. Let's see what that is.
All right, so we're going to go for tip number two when it comes.
All right, so technology. Avoid it at all costs. Now, of course, right, we use technology as part of life, right? But what concerns me, and we can talk forever about, you know, AI, this artificial intelligence, and all the wonderful things it does for us, I think we really need to look carefully to recognize that basically anything that we do, that we take advantage of, like technology, to make our life easier, there's always what do we call that, side effects. This is the way I talk to my kids, that whatever decision you make, be aware that there's probably going to be some side effect. There's going to be something that you didn't anticipate, that you got this thing that's a great medicine, it's going to fix everything, but there's side effects, and it's going to, you know, damage your liver or whatever. There's the possibilities of that. So when it comes to technology, there's or anything, whether it's technology or anything else that's going to try to make your life easier, it's going to promise to make your life easier, and everything's advertised that way, to be able to pull back and go, you know, what's the catch here? There's going to be a catch. This is going to make my life easier so that I don't have to think anymore. Wow. And if I don't think, where am I going to end up? So thinking's good. That's tip number two.
I think that's a really interesting point, which, by the way, nobody else has made, so I'm really glad you're making it. Nobody else has made it on this show, because we often don't realize the side effects. An obvious one more recently is with the introduction of social media, teenagers are spending 10 hours a day hooked to their phones, they're not sleeping, they're becoming more anxious and depressed, and you know, Australia just outlawed social media for people under 16, and I think that's a wonderful move forward. Unfortunately, I don't think it'll happen in this country, but this is an example of how things that seemed like, oh, this might be really helpful, can really be hurtful in the long run.
Like, you probably know that old Chinese story, I don't know, it was a Zen story, about the farmer. I'll just bastardize the story, but the farmer had a horse, and his neighbor said, "Oh, you're so lucky, you've got a horse." And the farmer said, "Well, we'll see." And then his son was riding the horse, fell off, broke his arm, and said, "Okay, well, maybe that horse isn't such a great thing." And the neighbor came and said, "Oh, so sorry about your son's broken arm. That's a terrible thing." And the farmer said, "Well, we'll see." And then the recruiter came by to draft all the young men to go to fight in the latest war, and saw the son with a broken arm and said, "Nah, we can't wait for that to heal. You stay home and heal up, and we'll go off and fight the war without you." And so, so there's several other layers to the story there, but basically everything that happened, we thought, wow, what a great thing, or what a terrible thing. If you look at it, take a little time and look at it a little deeper, you'll see that there's a lot more layers there. And if you're aware of all the layers, if you're curious about the layers, then you'll discover cool things. But if you go in there, you know, blinding yourself, wearing your own blinders, then you're going to miss a lot of that. And then you're going to be surprised when things don't go right.
And people, and my patients, clients who are in a difficult situation, I suggest to them, well, you never know how it's going to turn out. Just stay patient, work through this, and then you'll see, because oftentimes good comes out of even difficult situations, which I think is what this story tells us.
Yeah.
All right, that's two tips. Did you come up with a third? And these are unrehearsed interviews, so Ron had no chance to think about it beforehand.
tip number three. Bet on the Sun Devils. in the college football playoffs. They're the underdog. You probably get really good odds because people think that Texas will roll all over them. Take the points. So even if the Sun Devils don't win, they'll definitely they'll meet the spread. You'll make a lot of money.
All right, that's tip number three. Great.
That's where I got my master's in counseling was from Arizona State University.
There you go, and they've surprised everyone this year. So be curious, avoid technology, and bet on the underdogs, on the Sun Devils. Sorry, the Sun Devils.
Yeah. Well, I guess the second one, maybe we make it a third one, avoid technology and be aware of side effects. Anticipate side effects. So the Sun Devils, that was just an extra tip.
I got you. So, so anticipate side effects or be aware as you move forward, be aware because things will come up that you may not have considered. And I would add to that, be flexible. So when things come up, change course if necessary.
Very good. Yeah, I always want to give you more than you ask for and inspire you to come up with your own. So if I inspire you to come up with flexibility, pretty good.
You've done great. Ron, thank you so much for sharing this hour with us. I learned a lot. You're an amazing professor, and I wish for you a really happy holiday season.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to pontificate. And whenever I get a chance to think things through, talk things through like this, I get to see some new viewpoints. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Likewise. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.